Welcome back to the Digital Identity Podcast. We're here today to talk about DID, decentralized identifiers. I want to go through kind of the whole story, who, what, when, where, why, and how these work. So joining me today is Ben and Carlos. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Terry.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, so these guys are on the Self-Key R&D team, as you know. So let's get started then. So on a very high level, what problems do DID solve? Why don't we have Ben take this first?
So basically, it's trying to address the problems that exist with the current identity system that's, you know, primarily paper-based and built around centralized authorities, and create something that is digital and decentralized, being able to sort of take advantage of benefits of new infrastructure, as well as introducing the concept of self-sovereign identity. You're in more control and you own your identity and identity-related data, rather than passing that the ownership responsibilities on to a kind of a centralized authority.
For example, public keys, like cryptographic keys, already solve many of those problems. The question is, what happens if you lose a key, or how do you rotate, manage multiple keys tied to your identity in a digital way? DIDs stand sort of like a layer for self-sovereign control over those keys. What a DID allows to the identity owner is to associate multiple keys or multiple authentication mechanisms to a single identifier it's public, it's available publicly, and it's resolvable to all this information from anywhere, from any system. Under one single DID, a user can have multiple keys attached to it. Also importantly is that the identity owner can revoke their identity anytime, which is something perhaps with simple public keys we didn't have before. So those are kind of like strong points that DID brings to the identity table.
And if you're using that comparison, like you're saying, to a passport, right? Or any other sort of like traditional identification, they're all fragmented, right? So, you know, I'd have a passport, I'd have a driver's license, maybe I have a driver's license in a different country, employee ID somewhere, or whatever, right? Like account numbers for your utilities. But if you have like this digital system all centered around DIDs, you could in theory have everything connected to your DID. Obviously, we're pretty far off from that being a real world sort of adoption case. But in theory, you could have, you know, everything associated to one. It would be kind of like your user ID for life.
So going back to saying when you can revoke something, Carlos, what does this mean? Like, say I have my address on my DID, and if I move, would I revoke this and add a new one, or how would this work?
That could be done, but there's a distinction we have to make that's very important between what is known as verifiable claims or claims or credentials on this ecosystem and DIDs. Because DIDs as such, they're not meant to carry any personal identifiable information. DID is meant to be just an identifier with public keys, basically, and perhaps like URLs, service endpoints that you might want other actors to interact with you using those endpoints. But in real world examples, we tend to associate identity with papers, with these things that some authorities grant to people, like a passport, for example. When we translate that to this digital world, those become more like credentials. And that's what they are, actually. It's an authority always in these real world examples, granting you or claiming that you are, an American citizen, or that you have traveled to these and these places. It's all claims. In this case, these claims can be trusted because it's authorities behind them. But when you get to the digital world, you still have the same possibility for actors to issue this type of credentials. But the question is, what do you tie that to? Because in real world, your identity is yourself. It's your face. You carry all these documents with you. Identity community is trying to do is to take that, something as self-sovereign as that, to the digital world. So DID solves that problem because it's something that is meant for the owner to control only. No one can revoke that. You can. The identity owner can revoke its own identifiers, but it's something that's under your control. It's an identifier. It's like digital face, not revealing any information to which this type of credentials can be tied to, like passports and so on.
The DID in and of itself is just an identifier. All of these other sort of identification sort of like, you know, data, those are all meant to be associated with the DID, but not actually part of the DID. So they're two different things, like Carlos was saying. It's their claims or credentials, and then there's the DID in and of itself. So the DID doesn't actually really contain much information. Like you say, you were looking at like key management, authentication mechanisms, and then service endpoints.
So you have your DID that can resolve to different blockchains, but then you store your credentials on whatever blockchain you want it to, right? And then you can revoke that anytime.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be in a blockchain. The in the case of credentials, what's important is that the relationship, the association between the credential and this identifier can be proven cryptographically. So you might have in the example of the address, maybe a utility company can issue credentials stating that you live somewhere specifically. That could be a verifiable credential. So that could be an object that you store in your digital wallet. And you can share that with whoever needs it. And that object has to be signed by some of the keys that belong to the utility company DID. Mm-hmm. So it can be proven that the utility company issued that credential. The utility company could revoke that credential at some point, or the credential could expire. So maybe a relying party, someone checking this information, can know if this information is reliable, if it's still valid. So pretty much that's like the basic flows, basic operations you can do regarding DIDs and credentials.
The DIDs, they're not only for like an identity owner, right? You know, you can use DIDs for other parties, like these, like issuing parties who are going to be, you know, issuing claims, like you mentioned, the utility company example. A few different use cases there, you know, for depending on if you're an individual type or perhaps like a corporate or a government entity, and you know what you're using those keys associated with your DID for.
So if I'm going to get a DID today, like who gives this to me, or how do I set one up myself?
The whole idea of DIDs is that they are decentralized and they are self-sovereign. They in any DID method, no authority should be in charge of issuing these identifiers, or at least that's the desirable property of a DID system. It's open, it's public, and anyone should be able to just register a DID without much centralized points. So for the self-key method, we rely on a smart contract running on the blockchain Ethereum, which acts as a ledger, as a registry for identifiers, these identifiers. So it's a pretty simple contract. Any Ethereum address can make a call to this contract and register a DID. The contract generates this identifier by hashing the caller's address and adding some other variables to the mix, so to speak. And that's it. It's pretty much just an identifier that it's registered on-chain, and only that address that created that is able to either delete it or transfer control to a different address. So it's a pretty simple method. It allows us to build more complex identity mechanisms on top of it. So that's pretty much how it works.
So what does that look like then? Like I log in to my wallet in the self-key wallet and I make a call to the contract, or like, can you just walk me through that?
You'd make a call to the DID smart contract, and then it would return you the DID string in the format of the self-key method. As far as like the user experience, how that happens, you know, for the self-key wallet, when that feature gets released, basically it's going to be like a button click pretty much. You know? So let's say that I want to participate in an STO. And in order to do that, I need to prove that I am not an American citizen, let's say, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and register a DID first, because I need that DID in order for basically the rest of this to work, right? Because that's your identifier. That's what, you know, the claims are going to be tied to, right? It's using that DID as an identifier throughout this whole process, right? Then I'm going to go through the process of getting a claim issued to myself saying that I'm not an American citizen. In this case, let's say I'm going to go through a KYC process. So I'm going to submit my passport to a claims issuing authority, and they're going to review it. They're going to run it through their tools and checks and what have you. And they're going to come back saying, yes, Ben is not an American citizen. And then they're going to issue a credential, and that's going to be associated with my DID, right? So now that I have that claim, the STO contract could check my DID and see if I have a valid claim and see if that valid claim is actually of the correct status, right? It would allow me to participate in that STO and, you know, purchase tokens or trade tokens or whatever. You know, it starts with the DID because you need that identifier to tie everything else to. Then you can go through the process to get a claim issued. It's associated with that DID, right? It's, you know, it ties it together. And then you make use of that claim in another system, right? So in this case, we use the STO example.
And then it's the claim stays there forever since it's digital and it's signed already. It's
public, immutable. It's never getting deleted. Yep.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So what happens if I lose my key, or like, is there like a recovery way for this DID, or what would that look like?
One thing that we're working on that's pretty interesting that can be done with these smart contract-based identities or smart contract-based identity platforms is that on top of this self-key DID method that's just registry for simple identifiers tied to these Ethereum addresses, we're working on implementing a sort of a proxy identity contract identifiers like ERC-725 is the standard we're working on right now, exploring the possibilities of this proxy identity contract. So that allows tying multiple addresses or multiple keys to this single contract. It could work like an identity contract could work sort of like a multi-signature wallet. On top of that, recovery mechanisms can be implemented. So we're working on exploring like different possibilities. Many things can be done, like sharding a key between different parties, different friends or contacts, which is called like social recovery. So I can give you one key shard to you and one key shard to Ben, maybe one key shard to another entity. If I gather all these pieces, you can generate an recovery address or recovery key that neither of you could recover like by yourself. That's one way to manage identity recovery that's being considered in our system and in many systems. So you can recover your one cryptographic key given multiple parties get together and reconstruct this key. So maybe this key could perform certain operations on these identity contracts, such as change ownership or transfer control. So that many things can be done. So we're currently like testing, developing and researching on these different forms of identity recovery.
Gotcha. And hypothetically speaking, is there any way I can like lose my identity or like be a victim of identity theft when it comes to like a DID?
Theoretically, sure. I mean, if someone was able to take control of the private key that you use to manage your DID, then yeah.
Yeah. And that's working as intended because it's self-sovereign and you need to guard that properly.
With great power comes great responsibility, right?
That's right.
All right. Thanks for joining us for this episode. Make sure to tune in next week for part 2 of this discussion on decentralized identifiers, and we'll catch you then.